of the first rep, or just the first rep, and T1 vertebra posteriorly, T1 vertebra, you know, posteriorly. And so, you know, as you look at it, so that is the thoracic inlet, once structures are forming, you know, the thoracic inlet, okay? And then, when you look at this thoracic inlet, there are, as you know, there are structures passing through. Remember, structures that are in the thoracic cavity, and also remember in internal structures like your, you know, breaker plexus, they are all crossing right over the first rib and, you know, coming out there. So if there is, you know, something, that means if there is a crowding, you know, here, for whatever reasons, you can have certain, you know, conditions called thoracic outlet syndrome. Thoracic outlet syndrome. Okay? So that is thoracic outlet syndrome or costoclavicular. Thoracic outlet syndrome or costoclavicular. Costoclavicular. And as you look at it here, costoclavicular. Thoracic or costoclavicular syndrome. So this is called costoclavicular also, the other name, because of the clavicle, you know, that, you know, normally is, you know, sitting attached, you know, here, and then, you know, the first rib is here. And so when structures are passing, and if there's any crowding here for any reason, then you can compress those structures that are passing over there. So it can be the subclavian artery. It can be, look at all the structures that are passing here. So any of them can be compressed, the subclavian vein, the subclavian artery, and or, you know, the breaker plexus, the breaker plexus of nerves. So this is important. As you look at it here, here you have the clavicle has been cut off. So here you can see the subclavian vein coming down and the subclavian artery and, you know, the breaker plexus of nerves. But especially look at which, you know, cord is it, you know, trunk, if you look at it, the trunk, of course, you know, is further up here, but when you look at the cord, the inferior, or the medial, actually, the medial cord, so any of these structures can be compressed with crowding. And when you look at the structures here, the breaker, look at these muscles here, we have studied these muscles, but so this is your scalenus anterior, which we will study in the third quarter. Scalenus anterior, scalenus medius, these two muscles, and the breaker plexus is coming here. And so if there is compression on the subclavian artery, what signs and symptoms would you find? What would your patient demonstrate? This is artery. It goes into sleep, like, you know, so numbness, you may call it, you have to qualify that one and say it is not the nerve, you know, it is the artery numbness, you know, so blood is not going cold, you know, it becomes cold. And pallor is another medical term that pale, you know, upper extremity could be pallor. This is a medical term that you may see used over and over again in the medical practice. And so pallor, you know, all those, you know, things like coldness, pallor, and of the upper limb, and diminished radial pulse. When you look at the radial pulse, it may not be full and bounding. You know, it may be diminished, you know, if there is compression of the subclavian artery. So any of these, you know, can, you know, happen. And then, of course, if it is, the compression is on the brain, drug-related, you know, symptoms. This is normal on this side as you look at it. This is kind of abnormal. And what is this thing here that you see here, this thing here? This is the first rep, an abnormal first rep. And but this is, what is this thing here? This cervical rep. So here you can see the cervical rep. And so there you can see the cervical rep is there. So these problems can arise. And there's a whole bunch of them together is what people call it, you know, the thoracic outlet syndrome. The thoracic outlet, you know, syndrome. Grant's Marcus gives a very good diagram of the thoracic inlet. Grand Atlas. So this transparency that I have here, that I'm going to put on, this is from Grand Atlas. So as you look at this one, okay, this is alright. So right here. This also gives you a very good impression of the thoracic inlet. As you look at it here, muscles and everything. And so here, look at it, this is where the structures will be, you know, crossing. As you look at it here, you have the first rib right here, clavicle here, and you can see the space. So the structures are coming from here and from within, subclavian, you know, coming from within, crossing right over here, over the first rib, and look, right over the first rib, here we have the clavicle. And so that is how, you know, if there's a clubbing at the outlet, you are the thoracic inlet, including the thoracic inlet or superior thoracic aperture. The thoracic inlet or the superior thoracic outlet. You know, so you can have, you know, any of these, you know, symptoms there. Now, what structures, other than the ones that we mentioned, what structures are crossing? What structures do you normally see, you know, in this area? What are the structures here? What other structures other than the ones we mentioned? Trachea, esophagus, yeah, trachea, esophagus, vessels, nerves, lymphatics, passing, you know, from the head to the neck to the head, and, you know, whatnot. So all those things that are, all those structures that are here, if you look at it here, and the esophagus is, you know, just deep, but I mean, deep means behind. Behind the trachea is here, you can have the muscles there, you have the temporal veins there, and you still see, you know, part of the brachial plexus is here. So these are the structures, nerves you can see are passing. So those are all the structures that are passing, you know, and that, you know, thoracic inlet and or superior thoracic, you know, aperture, superior thoracic aperture. Now it also has a thoracic inlet. Because when you have, you know, the thoracic outlet there, you also have a thoracic inlet. I mean, thoracic outlet, okay? And so as you look at the thoracic outlet here, at the bottom right here, you see what is the thoracic outlet, what are the structures forming, you know, the thoracic outlet. So here, let's go here. Here is, okay, let's put, what structure do you have here? Okay, previous one, go. Alright. Here. Now, when you look at the outlet here, what structures are forming the outlet? Here is the outlet. The outlet, what structures, what is this here? The costal margin. So here you have the costal margin, and what do you have this one here? What is this here? The 12th rib, costal margin, the 12th, you know, T12, 12th rib, the costal margin, and what blocks, what structure sits at the thoracic, you know, outlet. What structure sits at the thoracic outlet? The diaphragm. Yes. Don't we have passing through the diaphragm, we have already gone over that. And so as you look at the structures here, you can see here, you can see several structures that's coming from the abdomen and going to the abdomen, thoracic aorta, going to the abdomen, and the esophagus, you know, going to the stomach, and aorta here and the esophagus, and of course the IVC coming from the abdomen, going into the thoracic cavity. But there are other small structures that I haven't gone over, the thoracic duct, and also your ascites vein. And all these structures also pass through the diaphragm in different, you know, places. And so that's several structures, the vagus nerves. And so the vagus nerve, both the right and the left vagus nerves will look, you know, right on, you know, the anterior and the posterior surfaces of the esophagus and passing into the abdomen. So there are several structures that are passing through the diaphragm. And then we, right here, we look at the thoracic cage. Now, why are we looking at the thoracic cage here? Because as we are looking at the thorax, what we do, we just look at the bones also. So when you look at the thorax, the thoracic cage, we look at the thoracic cage in terms of its inlet, its outlet. We will look at it and what structures are passing through these areas through the inlet and outlet. Now, what structures are forming the thoracic cage itself? Thoracic cage itself, when you look at it, and what does the thoracic cage do? What does it do? Yeah, protect and contain the internal viscera. Protect and contain the internal viscera. Namely, what are the important structures? The heart and the respiratory and cardiovascular. That means the heart and the lungs are, you know, in here, so it's protecting and containing it. And then, so in relation to what structures are forming the thoracic cage is why we are looking at the thoracic vertebrae pretty soon, the sternum and the ribs. So it's in relation to the thoracic cage. What structures are forming the thoracic cage? I'm not doing the vertebral column per se. I'm only doing the thoracic vertebra because thoracic vertebrae T1 to T12, you know, posteriorly, and then the assuming 12 pairs of ribs. Some people may have 13 pairs of ribs. And it's quite frequent occurrence. You know, supernumerary ribs are not unheard of. I had a student a long while ago, and I had a quiz, I think paired of one of the quizzes in the first quarter. So the number of ribs, you know, I had given, you know, I had, you know, true or false. And she mounted false, 12 pairs. So I mounted wrong. And so she came running to me and said, "Feel me." So I felt her. She had 13 pairs. So she said, "That's why I wrote it for true." So I gave her the point because, you know, and so that got her. So it's not only Megan Anderson. So there have been, you know, other people. And so, but it was true in her case, though. She had 13 pairs, and we got a chance to palpate. A lot of people got a chance to palpate 13 pair of ribs. So usually 12 pairs. But so when it happens, it's usually on, you know, L1. Usually on L1, you know, vertebra. So 12 pairs of ribs and their cartilages and the sternum, manubrium and the body and the cycloid process, the sternum in front and posteriorly, you have the T1 to T12, you know, vertebrae. So in relation to the thoracic cage, we will just quickly look at the sternum. As you look at the sternum, you would note that the manubrium is there, the body is there, cycloid process, but in addition to just looking at it as bones and where it is located, you can also see the articulations formed by the manubrium. Look at the manubrium here. It is articulating with the body here. So what is it forming here? What do you know about this structure that is here? What do you know about that structure? What would you call it? The sternal angle. So the sternal angle is formed by the articulation of chart. You know, we've grasped many things. And so here, now, as you look at the body here, there's a couple of other things other than, you know, the articulations and the body of the standard being short and all that. Also, I don't want to go into the ribs as yet. The two clinical conditions that I went over here related to the sternum, you know, that is pigeon chest and funnel chest. Funnel chest and pigeon chest. So here, funnel chest. Pigeon chest, like the pigeons, you know, they fly around here and all over. Funnel chest, see, the normal position of the sternum is, you know, anterior, is directed anteriorly and inferiorly. As you look at the sternum here, right here, see, the body of the sternum is directed anterior, inferior. Okay? But in case of the frontal chest, the body of the sternum is going to be directed inferiorly and posteriorly. Inferiorly and posteriorly. So that is the frontal chest, and you may find that in, you know, in some of your, you know, patients. And then you have, that means the direction of the body of the sternum is that what we are talking about. And then pigeon chest, the sternum projects anteriorly. The sternum projects anteriorly, like in a bird. That's what's called a pigeon chest, like in a bird. The sternum projects anteriorly. And the sides of the sternum, part of the sternum, are kind of flat. So that is the pigeon chest, where the sternum is projecting anteriorly and the sides are, you know, flat. So those are two conditions. And there's another little condition there also, that is, you may find with faulty ossification, you may find a hole in the sternum body. You may find a hole in the sternum body. And so, this is my own transparency. This doesn't belong to the school. That's where they're colored. I used to buy, there were times we used to buy our own transparencies, okay? So I figured I'd buy colored ones. And so then I copied them onto the colored, that's which is colored. And so here, where I have put the little dot there, sometimes this is the body of the sternum. And so you may find, if the ossification was not, I'll get you in a minute. If they, that's for a question or just for comfort? It's a question, okay, I'll come. And so, no, because she was resting it on the back of the chair. And so, sometimes if the ossification is not complete, you may have a hole in the body of the sternum. And as a physician, if you see that, you want to investigate that. You know, don't just mistake it for a bullet hole. Because these days, you know, you may mistake such things as a bullet hole. And so, instead of that, you know, investigate it before you call it a bullet hole. And it is during development, if the ossification was not, if it was faulty, if it was not complete, you may find a hole in the sternal body. Reasonably big enough for you to suspect it to be, you know, maybe a bullet hole. Yes, you have a question. Like, instead of, you know, it's like that, and the body is projected forward, and the sides are, you know, like that, the rib cage. A rib cage normally is kind of in us, you know, kind of rounded. Yeah, rib cage is, yeah. Yeah, the sternum is projecting anteriorly, and the rib cage, instead of being rounded, you know, it is more flat like that. Because in the thoracic cage, when you look at the thoracic cage, what is it shaped like? A conical shape, isn't it? It is conically shaped. The thoracic cage normally is conically
free out of the current ancestry.
I was just going to say that our cadaver.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Our cadaver has this.
Your cadaver has what?
Has the pigeon chest.
The pigeon chest? Which number is the cadaver? Okay, so everybody should go and take a look at it. Okay.
Nine.
Number nine, table number nine. Isn't it right? Table number nine, male, female?
Female.
Female. What causes what? What causes the pigeon chest is the question. I don't know what causes it. I would say some. There's a lot of things that happen to us. You know, feminine tendency, you will find some families, you know, that's handed down. There may be some anomaly someplace. I don't think people have done much research into such things because they are not as, you know, demanding in terms of death and, you know, all these things. People rather do breast cancer, prostate cancer research than, you know, investigate pigeon chest. And so, that is the reason. That's where money is also, and that's also more important, you know, to learn. So these things you learn, and that is there, people live with it, they have a problem, so they can breathe, so what? And that's what it is, yeah. There is really, they are able to breathe and they don't seem to have much of a problem. But when you look at the x-rays, you may find these things and don't be surprised and don't be alarmed that there is that percentage of the population you may come across these things. But they are not, you know, limitations, you know, in terms of their ability to live day to day life. Yes?
If you have incomplete ossification of.
If I have what? Wait, yeah.
The hole in the sternum, the incomplete ossification, do you expect to see incomplete ossification in other bones, or is it usually just...
You may want to, as a physician, it's your job, not mine, to look at other parts. See, I just go and say all these things and move. And then what happens is, you as a physician, it becomes that thinking, and that is more important to you. And so it is up to you to look at the rest of the things and see if there's anything else. Okay, it can be, but I'm not sure of. Okay, now let's move on. So that's the sternum. Good, here is the, then the parts of, or the components of the thoracic cage comes out, ribs. Okay, we have, as we talked about, typical ribs, you know, and typical ribs, and which ones are, you know, atypical, and so one should be, yeah, first rib is there, so that's why. When we look at the ribs here, okay, here, you know, the violator.
Thank you.
Says, you believe in Jesus. And the guy says, yes, yes. This is a friend who says yes. And so Dr. Norman says, what about to see him now? And so... so like that, you're not a prospective student. You are about to become one. And so... And so on two, the neck. And so that what is, you know, what you call the tubercle is, you know, something very little up there, and the body is very short. But we talk about rib number one because of its importance in terms of what structures are crossing over rib one, what muscles are attaching to rib one, what muscles are attaching. There are muscle attachments. Rib one gives muscle attachments to several muscles, you know, here, your skeletal muscles, as well as your subclavius, as you can, and as you can see, which I will show some of the muscles here. And so that is the reason why we go over, you know, rib one, here look at the muscle attachment here, and look at, you know, the muscle attachment. Also, from the outer surface here, you have subclavius taking on it and going and inserting, you know, to the clavicle. So that is why rib one, and then it's forming also the thoracic inlet, you know, rib one. That's when we talk about rib one. And there can be all kinds of other, you know, abnormalities also you may find. You know, you've seen one of them like that, you know, so there's been bifurcation of the cartilage, you know, there. So there are some abnormalities that are pertinent to only rib one, double rib one. I've seen, you know, three or four ribs, you know, like in the right in the thoracic cage here, on both sides, sitting one on top of each other, three or four of them, double ribs I've seen in the cadaver. Yeah, like that. That means, yes, it's a good idea to show one set on top of the other, connected with the, you know, fascia, connected with the fascia. I've seen it like that. But the person lived, and that cadaver was an old, you know, person's, you know, body, and so, you know, the person lived without, you know, I don't know what problems the person has had. I don't remember now. It's so many years ago that I had, you know, seen that one. And so then, yes. A slipped rib is, you know, when you have the articulations on the ribs articulate onto the, now I can show you here. See here, it is articulated anteriorly with sternum. And so it can slip or it can dislocate, you know, from here. You know, it is connection with the cartilage can. And it can also, you know, dislocate here. Slip risk of rib is really when its articulation with the sternum, you know, is not there, it is slipping. That, you know, that is the slipped, you know, rib. And so then where was I? So here, there are atypical ribs and costal cartilages. What is costal cartilages? What type of cartilage is making the costal cartilage? What type is it? Hyaline cartilage. Costal margin, you've already seen the costal margin. Costal margin is an examining area that you can stand behind the person and you can palpate. You can feel the costal margin, you know, right over here like that. So that's the costal margin. What ribs make up the costal margin? What structures make up the costal margin? What structures? Costal cartilages of? Ribs? 7 to 10. Ribs 7 to 10. Okay? Ribs 7 to 10. Costal cartilages of ribs 7 to 10 make up the costal margin. Now, these, so here, as you look at it here, you can see the costal margin. Okay, when the computer wakes up, it is going to sleep. Okay, So I will also go over it here, and tubercle. The tubercle, the rat has to be here, the tubercle. And so here you can see how it is sitting, you know, in relation to, you know, the vertebra. I'm not going over all of the details of these joints. That is, when you look at these joints here, you can see there are lots of ligaments there. Lots of ligaments there. Short ligaments, radial ligaments, radiate ligaments, all kinds of ligaments. As a physician, are you going to be able to, are you going to remember all these ligaments? No, you're not going to. That's why I'm not asking you to, you know these ligaments, but you need to know that these are held in place by ligaments, okay? And anterior, posterior, all around, and look at this, you know, held in place. And you can see even in between, you know, the vertebrae here, you have, you know, other ligaments also, even after a little bit after the, what is called your articulations, it's also held in place. And so what type of movement and what type of a joint do you think is the head of the ribs, that means the costovertebral, you know, joints, what type of it, what type is it, and what type of movement will it be permitting normally? Synovial plane, synovial plane, that means just, you know, gliding. I mean, move and see, you know, you can do all kinds of movements. You know, there is slight, very slight, you know, gliding, you know, taking place. And so next one is the costochondral. Costochondral, here, see the name of these joints really tells you, the names tell you what, where they are and what they are doing and what they can do. Let's take a look at this one here. Costochondral. So the rib and the articular and the hyaline cartilage pieces here are articulating. What type are these joints and what movements are, you know, perpetrated? What type of joint I ask you is that, you know, so you know, when you know the type, then you know what movement is around there. No movement, there's no movement, okay? There's no movement here. And what is articulating? This is the cartilage and the bone articulating. So what type of joint is this? Primary. That's okay. You at least know cartilaginous, primary cartilage. And so where the periosteum and the perichondrium, you know, are, you know, coming together, and it's really fused, the periosteum and the perichondrium here, the periosteum here, so the membranes, you know, become continuous like that, and so that is no movement there, and that is costochondral, and, I mean, you may wonder, who can keep all the strength in our hands, and, you know, the spinals are coming, how are people going to do this? You can do it very easily. Look at the names. Look at the names of these joints, and it tells you everything about it. Costochondral. Costotransverse. Costovertebral. Costotransverse. Transverse process of the vertebra and the rib. Costovertebra. Rib and the vertebra. Okay, so you can keep it straight like that, you know, when you really, you know, look at the name, you know, of these joints. And then we have, yes. Transverse process of what? On this diagram, I cannot show you the transverse process, because the transverse process belongs to the what structure? The vertebrae. The vertebrae, okay? And so the vertebrae is at the back. And so here, look at it here, the skeletal system, the introductory pages, skeletal system, vertebrae, ribs, sternum, okay? We have short bones, long bones, flat bones, okay? Regular bones. This comes under regular bones. So transverse process have, you know, joint cavity, what type of a joint is this? Synovial, it's synovial. What type of synovial would you expect to be here? Just take a guess, wild guess. Plain, you're right, plain. Because you don't want too much movement, but you need some, you know, movement, okay? Synovial plain, that means there is, you know, slight movement during respiration. Yes, have a stagger, yes. The first rep is the primary part, as it is not plain synovial, okay? So first rep, that's articulate, but the articulation, the type of articulation is different. And so as you can see, it's primary carpalis right here, okay? But all the others are, you know, plain, you know, synovial. It gives, you know, some movement. And so that is sternochondral, some places we'll say. And, yes, Diane. Very slight, like very slight, because you don't want you don't want too much movement, but you do have the movement. You can put your hands right on the side of the sternum and take a deep breath, and you can really feel the movement. When you take a real deep breath, what happens is the manubrio sternal joint that we have gone over. You know this one, the manubrio sternal joint really even goes and straightens. You know that angle. Straighten out. You see, the angle is sitting like that. It can really straighten that angle. And these ones will give us, you know, some way, some movement, slight movement. Okay. And so then, manubrio sternum, we have already talked about what structures are articulating there. Manubrio sternum, oh, is it thinking after the joint, we can take a break. I see people are, you know, going. Manubrio sternum. What type of a joint is it? Manubrio sternum? Symphysis, yes. It is a symphysis, secondary cartilaginous. When it's a symphysis, secondary cartilaginous. Okay? So even though it is a symphysis, even though it is secondary cartilaginous, even if it's a symphysis, but it does have slight movement. It does have manubrio sternal joint has slight movement. Because even though there's not like, you know, in between the articulation, articular parts, it still gives, you know, some degree of movement. Okay, you can feel that. There's only one joint left, then we can take a break. Okay? Symphysternal joint here, siphoid process of the sternum, with the body of the sternum. Symphysternal here, okay? That symphysternal joint is, symphysternal is actually primary cartilaginous. And it's, you know, the siphoid process itself, you know, remains as a cartilage for a while until the fourth decade of life or somewhere there, you know, 40 years and up, it begins to ossify. And so therefore, there is a clinical thing, it's not written there, but the clinical thing when you're doing, what you call this, when you are, you know, trying to, you know, revive somebody, what you call the, when you're doing the CPR, you have to be careful, you may break. In an older person, when you're doing the CPR, you may break the siphoid process because it becomes ossified after a while. The ossification, you know, begins, and so that you have to be, but mind you, even if you break it, you are trying to, if you save the person's life, if you're saving my life, I would be happy that you broke it but saved my life. And so, all right, I think I'll take the questions, then we can take a break. Any questions? No? Okay, then let's take a, you know, quick break and continue with the rest. And the vertebrae is only not the entire vertebral column, remember? What I'm doing is because the thoracic vertebrae, because of the thoracic vertebrae is the only reason why I'm doing, and it is only the thoracic vertebrae that, you know, that I'm doing. And what, see, everywhere you go, in terms of the vertebral column, we have different characteristics for the vertebrae. Different characteristics. same characteristics for the thoracic vertebrae. Looking at them here, you can see their spinous processes are different. See here? And then this is slowly okay here. And then look at the spinous processes, you know, of the thoracic vertebrae about, you know, right down here, right up to there. And so look at the spinous processes of the others, they are, you know, different. In addition to the spinous processes alone and pointing and overlapping, you know, over each other, you know, like that, and the demi-facets, that means, you know, the articular facets are half, you know, one more than, you know, not all of them. And the bodies of the vertebrae are a little bit bigger than the bodies in the cervical region, as you look at it here. And let me see, also, on the transverse processes, they have the articular facets here, the transverse processes. And then here you can see, this one, all the demi facets. So those are the identifying characteristics of the thoracic vertebrae. And the others, when we do the back, the entire vertebral column will be done when we do the back. That is, but here, as part of, and the special features I have, you know, gone over of the thoracic vertebrae. So even though I'm not doing the vertebral column, since I have gone over the thoracic vertebrae here, they're fair game on any exams or quizzes, even though we have not done the vertebral column. Now, next comes the movements of the thoracic cage. The movements of the thoracic cage. Okay? Now, you see the cage. You see the thoracic cage, what structures are forming it, and you see it is conically shaped, and, you know, has an inlet and an outlet. You know, and so now, how does it move? How, you know, what is the dimensions in which it moves? This is not physiology, only anatomically. You know, I'm talking about anatomically. What is happening, you know, to the thoracic cage? That means when you have the movements of the thoracic cage, how does it move? How does the thoracic cage move? How does the thoracic cage move? Here is the cage here. How does it move? What's happening? What's the initial thing? Hey, it moves. She's showing me the movement. Since you're showing me the movements, they're moving in three dimensions. They can move in three dimensions. The dimension that you're showing me, that is transverse dimension. See, that is, you know, this dimension, increasing. Okay, transverse dimension. And then, sorry, you can also move it. Vertical. Increase or decrease the vertical. Vertical dimension or vertical diameter. Transverse, vertical, and what's the other one? Anterior, posterior. Front and back. Anterior, posterior. So there are three dimensions. Anterior, posterior. Transverse. Side to side. Transverse. And, you know, vertical. These are the three dimensions. So what happens is, when you have movements of the thoracic cage, there are two classical movements we talk about, bucket handle and pump handle. But before coming to the bucket handle and the pump handle movements, let's look at this diagram here, and then you will see right here we have the intercostal muscles here. So intercostal muscles, okay? As you look at these spaces here, ribs, we have muscles. They're called intercostal muscles. And so here you can see the intercostal muscles here. So when the intercostal, you know, muscles, you know, contract, that means movement of the thoracic cage. With the movement of the thoracic cage, what is going to happen is you will increase or decrease the volume, the thoracic, you know, volume. Movement increases or decreases the thoracic volume. Movement increases or decreases the thoracic volume. Okay? And so with the volume change, the pressure will change. movement of the thoracic cage will increase or decrease the thoracic volume. With the increase or decrease in thoracic volume, you know, you will have change in pressure. With the change in pressure, it will draw the air in or the air out. You with me? Okay, that is good. And so the maximum amount of air can come in when the thoracic cage increases to the maximum in all three dimensions. The maximum amount of air can go in when the thoracic cage increases in the vertical diameter, in the transverse diameter, and in the anterior-posterior diameter. Okay? So that is the basic principle of movement of the thoracic cage. And then, with that, now we add the bucket handle movement. Now we add the bucket handle movement, okay? Bucket handle movement, okay? What's happening at the bucket handle movement? So here is a little bucket, and so here I have, see here, this is the handle of a bucket. And you can see that handle is attached anteriorly and posteriorly, okay? Normally sitting like that. So, you see, the bucket handle. So when the convexity here of this bucket handle, if it moves like that, see, then you can see how the transverse diameter can increase. How the transverse diameter can increase. That means here, you see here? So at the movement here is more taking place at the lower ribs. So here, here it is pulling up like that. So when the intercostal muscles contract, so they can pull up, you know, this part, the convex part right here, can pull up, and so the ribs are moving laterally and increasing, you know, the transverse diameter of the thoracic cage. Okay? So that is why it's called the bucket handle movement. Because it's like the ribs are like the bucket handles. The ribs have attachments anteriorly and posteriorly. The bucket handle has attached anteriorly and posteriorly. So the intercostal muscles contract, they raise the ribs here like that, you know, so here it has increased. And this movement is taking place more at the lower ribs. Bucket handle movement is taking place, you know, more at the lower wrist. At the lower ribs. Okay? And so then we have what's called the pump handle movement. That a lot of you may not know. There are some engineers in the class, they will know those, you know, most probably better than the others. Pump handle movement. What I mean is the pump, the engineers must have seen it. They might have had to design it, you know, the pump that goes into the, like an artesian well, you know, you have a pump going into the depth to get the water. That pump is what I'm talking about, okay? So the pump handle movement is like here. Let me draw my little pump here. So here is the little pump. Let's go with the pump here, okay? know, the flowing of the water is coming, the air is pulled up, and you, here you have the, you know, the water is coming up. That depression here is taking place, you know, right, you know, through here, right through, you know, your, what is called the costal, you know, the costal vertebra, you know, joint here. So when, what is happening is, when these, the intercostal muscles act and pull up the ribs, what's happening is, so the costal vertebral, costal transverse, both of them are going to be acting. They're going to be acting. And as the slight movement and the costal transverse, one can have slight rotatory movement also because of the shape of the vertebral surfaces. And so what is happening is the ribs are lowered in a sliding direction. So when you're pulling it here like that, the it can raise the angular ends of the ribs and down. It can raise the slight movements of these joints, you know, at the back can raise the angular ends of the sternum and the ribs. So you can test that by put your pins down, take, you know, put your hands on, you know, especially the, this is taking place especially at the ribs, you know, the upper ribs, 2 to 6, that's where most of the pump is taking place. Put your hands down and put, you know, put the hands here and take a deep breath and feel the movement of the very important sternum. You can see the anteroposterior diameter. You can feel the anteroposterior diameter increasing. That's why that is increasing. So with the bucket and the pump handle movement, the anteroposterior diameter is increasing. With the bucket handle movement, the transverse diameter is increasing. How is the vertical diameter increasing? What is increasing the vertical diameter? Just guess. You don't have to look at the computer or any place. Don't type in anything. Just guess. Use your brain. Use the logic. You will get it. Diaphragm, exactly. See, Charles didn't look at any computer. He just looked in here. The diaphragm is contracting. Because when the diaphragm is contracting, it's pulling down. The diaphragm comes down, compressing the abdominal viscera. Compressing the abdominal viscera. So the intra-abdominal pressure increases, but the intrathoracic pressure decreases. The intrathoracic pressure decreases, and the anteroposterior diameter, the vertical diameter, you know, the vertical diameter increases. So diaphragm is the muscle of inspiration because it's contracting. When it contracts, it's pulling its, you know, muscle fibers down because the diaphragm has a central tendon. And with that, into that central tendon, you have muscle fibers inserted. And so right here, when you look at this diagram of the diaphragm, here you can see all these tendinous part of the diaphragm, see all these muscle fibers, of the diaphragm are taking origin from, you know, the entire circumference of different parts of the thoracic cage. And they have the central tendon into which these fibers are inserted, so that they can pull it down. When they pull it down, they compress. And so increasingly they increase, you know, the intra-thoracic, you know, volume. That means they're increasing the vertical diameter of the thoracic cavity. Yes. The pump handle movement, you know, the joints at the back, you know, are the ones that are, you know, like where you put the exert the pressure on the handle, like that. The handles are, you know, your the articulations at the back, you know, the ribs articulating with the vertebrae. That is the handle. Okay? The slight gliding and the slight rotatory movement. That of the, especially of the 2 to 6 ribs, the upper ribs, okay, will act as that. And then it will raise, not this much, a little bit, you know, of your, the anterior ends of the ribs and the sternum. Okay, so that is the, anybody? have seen and heard about the anterior thoracic anterior cervical anterior muscle, and but there are also other. So here we have the serratus anterior muscle, which you know you would have looked at or seen or heard or something, that our serratus anterior muscle taking origin from you know the upper eight ribs. Okay, serratus serrati muscles of the thoracic wall. Why are we doing muscles of the thoracic wall now? Because they have attachment. Those muscles that have attachment to the ribs some way can participate in the in respiration. Some way, directly or indirectly, they can participate in respiration. As you look at the serratus anterior muscle, take more from the ribs right here. All these digitations that you see here. And where does the serratus anterior muscle insert? To the scapula. Which part of the scapula? The medial border of the scapula. So look at this here. When you take origin from here and going to the medial border, not here. The medial border. Let me take the scapula and show it to you. And so that is where it is inserting right to. So it's taking origin from the ribs. And so this is the lateral border of the scapula. This is the medial border of the scapula. So this is attaching here. By this attachment, you guys, by the attachment of the serratus anterior muscle to the scapula, the scapula stays. That's one of the reasons why with which the scapula stays on, you know, on the ribs. Okay, so this is where it's inserting. This is where it's inserting. The scapula is sitting like that. Okay, this is where it's inserting. And what is the innervation to the serratus anterior muscle? Long thoracic nerve, you can see that. The long thoracic nerve is here, right here. So it is, you know, innervating. And then we also have other serrati, plural, serratus, you know, muscles. We also have those. Those are, again, serratus posterior superior and serratus posterior inferior. That tells you everything about those muscles. Serratus, posterior, superior. Serratus, posterior, inferior. Look at it here. Okay, so here. Serratus, posterior, superior. Serratus, posterior, inferior. Now look at their attachments. Their attachments tell you what they do, why we are looking at them now. How are they attached? What is their attachments? Where do you see them? Attached to the ribs. Look at them. To the vertebrae and to the ribs. As you look at the vertebrae and the ribs, you can see that they are able to participate in respiration. This is their insertions. The first, you know, four ribs right here. You know, what is the second? Yeah. So second here. The second, third, fourth, and fifth. So here. Origin insertions and their origin insertions. expression is where we can go and look at the intercostal space and let's go and carry. And one of the things you want to keep in mind about the respiratory muscles that are in the intercostal spaces, that means intercostal muscles, they are arranged in three incomplete layers. They are arranged in three incomplete layers. That is what you need to keep in mind, because no one intercostal muscles is completely coming from the front to the back. They're not complete muscle cartilage. So that's why we would call the intercostal muscles are three incomplete layers, but we don't have spaces there. They are not sitting as incomplete. Let me see, the external intercostal muscle, so that means the external layer, and so you can see external intercostal membrane, external intercostal muscle. So here, you have this diagram here. This is a cross-section of the intercostal space, of an intercostal space here. And so right here, let's look at it here, right here. And let's look at this intercostal space here. And you can see, here is the stem. And so in this part of here, okay, right, I have red, green, purple, and blue, and blue. This is the front, this is the back. Because you see the vertebrae, that means the back right here. And so from the sternum, look at it, from the side of the sternum, right here, you have the external, here is the sternum, the external intercostal muscle. See the external intercostal muscle going continually right up to here only. See here? And then, you know, so right here, so that doesn't come all the way to the sternum. A little bit before the sternum, it stops. And if you put the anteroposterior, but that maybe you can see. This was better, but this is what you can see. See here? So you look at the here. Okay. As you look at this here, see, this is the beginning as you look at it here. External. But here is membranous. See here? This is membranous. So the outer layer, when we come over here, right here in blue color, the part of the external intercostal muscle that's close to the sternum is membranous. That membranous part is what we call, you know, the external intercostal membrane. The external intercostal membrane. And then from here, it's going back, all the way back to the tubercles of the ribs. To the tubercles of the ribs, here you have the external intercostal muscle. And the external intercostal muscles, as you look at them, they have, you know, origins and, you know, insertions. Origins and insertions from the ribs, Here we have the ribs here, okay? So their origins and insertions are from the ribs. As you look at them here, external intercostal muscle from the lower part of the rib, inserting the upper part here, from here to here, like that is origin score. But they are extending from the above the roughly from the costochondral junction all the way back in the intercostal spaces, all the way back to the tubercles of the ribs. And then if right over here, it is, you know, your external intercostal membrane, the muscle fibers become, you know, membranous. So if we look at the outer layer of the respiratory muscles, so you have seen the external intercostal. At the back here, we have what is called levatorus
midribs.
Midribs and intercostal. Levator costae, you will not see this quarter. You will see the levator costae only when you are doing the ribs. Only when you are doing the ribs posteriorly. So levator costae is right over there. Okay, right over here, you will have the levator costae muscles only in the thoracic region. Right over here, you will have the small muscles here. So the external layer is formed by external intercostal muscles and the levator costae or the levatorus costarum muscles. And then we have a middle layer. So the levator costarum, let me put that also in blue color here. So that is because that is about, you know, here like that. The levatorus costae. And then the middle layer. The middle layer comes here in green color. Middle layer, that means the internal intercostal muscle is coming, extending from the sternum, right from the sternum, all the way back to the angle of the ribs. To the angle of the ribs, it stays as muscular, like muscle fibers, and then it gets membranous to the back. The membrane is, it's membranous like that. And so that is the internal intercostal membrane, internal intercostal muscle, and the internal intercostal membrane. You can see that here. Right here, here you can see the internal intercostal membrane. From about the angle of the rib, that's the rib here, angle. And so the internal intercostal muscles kind of terminated there as being a muscle, then it becomes membranous. It becomes membranous. So that is the internal intercostal membrane. So that is the middle layer. So middle layer, you only have one muscle, the internal intercostal muscle. They also have origins. They also have origins, you know, and insertions from the, what do you call the ribs? From the, or one of them, that means from the second rib. They take origin, you know, from, say, this is the upper rib, and so they don't get, take origin, you know, from the upper border of, see, the upper border of this rib inserts right here. So, what you have is the external intercostal muscle, the internal intercostal muscles, they have origins and insertions in the opposite direction. So if the external intercostal muscle is a muscle of inspiration, what do you expect the internal intercostal muscles to be doing? Expiration. Okay, because it's pulling, you know, down the ribs. And what do you think? What nerve do you think are innervating these intercostal muscles? Intercostal nerves. Segmental innervation by the intercostal nerves. Segmental means in whichever segment you find this intercostal muscle, that, you know, if you are in the fifth intercostal space, the fifth, you know, intercostal nerve, you know, is innervating it. What is the intercostal nerve? Define the intercostal nerve. What is the intercostal nerve? Right. The ventral primary rami of the thoracic nerves, thoracic spinal nerves. The ventral primary rami of the thoracic spinal nerves. Look at it here. Look at it here. Here, all you have to do is look at this. Okay? See here, you didn't have to go to any computer. You just look at it here. Here is your spinal nerve, the short little spinal nerve here. This is the ventral primary ramus. That's the intercostal nerve. And this one is the dorsal ramus of the spinal nerve. So intercostal nerves, you may remember. You may not remember. You may remember. All the ventral primary rami of the spinal nerves in the thoracic region do not form any plexuses. We never talked about any plexuses in the thoracic region. So all the ventral primary rami of the spinal nerves, T1, contributes to the brachial plexus, but the rest of it, T1. So in the three-dimensional portion here, T1 to T12, what we have is the metropolitan area are forming processes because they have other things to do. They are not going to be forming processes, they are intercostal nerves. So those intercostal nerves are passing in the intercostal spaces and are innervating, you know, the intercostal muscles, and they have other jobs to do also. But here, so you can see those are intercostal nerves, and then in the innermost layer, that means the third layer has three muscles, transversus, pharyngeus, subcostals, and there's the innermost intercostal. Transversus, pharyngeus is right here. We don't have any classes on the space then. Yeah, unfortunate. And so right here, yeah. And so, yes, I know. I know. I think, I don't know why we have 2 days. I think one day should be good enough. And so right here, yeah. See, I'm not a president then, so I mean, do you have to be born in the United States to become the president of the United States?
Yes.
So my chance is gone. Okay, so
that's why sports name can't.
So right here you have this general, I mean, but to make the policies to, you know, to, you know, to have the law that only 3 days, and so right here,
no,
the
it's going to be after mom, it's going to be woman.
Just this one, then I'm not doing the nails, I'll do the nails.
That's why it happened voting too.
This is channel.
Or a lesbian woman who's on welfare with her 12 kids, with girlfriend and dad. Then all of us
is these muscles, okay? That's part of here, you have the transversus, thoracic muscles. Then there is a membrane, okay? And so here is the membrane in the green color. Let me put the membrane here. See? And then there is a muscle here. Muscle in red color. That means your innermost intercostal muscle. And then there's a little bit of a membrane. And then there is what is called the subcostals. There's the subcostals at the lower part here. These are the subcostals. The subcostals are way at the back where you have the false ribs, Yeah, you can take them from the false ribs, I know. And so here, when you look at the subcostals, you can see the subcostals here at the way at the back. So there are three incomplete layers, subcostals here, at the back. See, the transversus thoracis is in front. Subcostals are at the back, right here. And then you have the innermost intercostals. Innermost intercostals here. So this one, two, three. External, middle, and internal. Three incomplete layers of intercostal muscles are in the major bottom up there. And let me see, on this outline, I also have the arteries, veins, and the nerves. The nerves are going to spend a little time. And so, a little bit also on the arteries, you know, and so then we will go into the diaphragm. Because we have another class. We have one or two lectures. I finished the diaphragm in that lecture, and we have a quiz that day, and after that quiz, I can easily finish the diaphragm. You have a question? Somebody there, you have a question? Can I see that? Somebody has a hand up. No? Okay, yeah. Matt Sarawan. Yes. Free printer material, read from page 1 to the midterms. Because I could still ask you the body cavities. Because people don't get something. No, you have to review the whole thing. I'm sorry to say that. You have to review the whole thing. I can't say we can choose only this or that. Because when you get a case or a diagnosis, we're not making a choice in some areas. But you will be surprised, man, when you come to review, it's much easier because you've already studied it 3 times for the quizzes and for your chess and then your picture. So that is just really like drinking a cold cup of tea which you don't want. So you just have to The quiz will be, yes, the quiz, the last quiz